Welcome to Kresge Auditorium at Interlochen Center for the Arts. I'm Peter Payette from Interlochen Public Radio.
I'm Rick Pluta, the State Capitol Bureau Chief for the Michigan Public Radio Network. We are live at a memorial service for William G. Milliken, Michigan's longest-serving governor.
I would hope that I would be remembered as a governor of the state that dealt honestly and openly and fairly with every person in this state.
A Traverse City businessman who flew 50 bombing missions in World War II. As governor, Milliken was known for his support for civil rights and a commitment to environmental stewardship. His 14 years in office were characterized by consensus building, when possible, across party lines, which he said was essential to getting anything done in Lansing.
I genuinely believe that if someone's trying to do a decent and a good job, that will be rewarded at the polls. And in order to do that, a certain willingness to share credit with the opposition, to not to demonize opponents, but to attempt to find common ground. And it seemed, on the whole, to have worked.
Today's speakers include Governor Gretchen Whitmer, political advisor Bill Rustem, journalist Jack Lessenberry, Charles Stokes from WXYZ Detroit, and Captain Arlen Brower from the Michigan State Police.
Here's Trey Devey. He's the
president of Interlochen Center for the Arts.
Good afternoon. My name is Trey Devey, president of Interlochen Center for the Arts. It is my pleasure to welcome you to our campus today, as well as those joining us live through public radio and television, as we celebrate and remember a distinguished and accomplished man, a man who had a profound impact on our state, our country, and right here at Interlochen, William Milliken. It is an honor to have you here at Interlochen today, where we recognize and remember Governor Milliken not only as one of our state's leading citizens, but also as an advocate for this region and as an advocate for the arts. Among his many local civic contributions, we're fortunate that Governor Milliken dedicated himself to Interlochen. Governor Milliken served as a trustee of Interlochen Center for the Arts for 15 years and was named an emeritus trustee on the conclusion of his service. Interlochen's standing as one of the most important artistic and educational institutions in the world was advanced through his leadership. He is beloved in our state, and he is certainly beloved on this campus. I'll share just one example of his impact. It was largely due to his vision that Interlochen began our creative writing program in 1976. 44 years later, that program is recognized as one of the most distinguished high school writing programs in the country. Now today, Interlochen Arts Academy boasts more presidential scholars than any other high school in the nation. 19 of the 46 presidential scholars in the arts, thank you. 19 of the 46 presidential scholars in the arts produced here at the Academy graduated from the very creative writing program he created. Interlochen will remember and celebrate Governor Milliken for decades to come in a prominent space in our new residence hall and visiting artist suites here on the shores of Green Lake. A generous planned gift by Governor Milliken will help us bring together students, faculty, and students and guest artists from every state in the nation and dozens of countries from around the world. Interlochen believes in the ideal of world friendship through the universal language of the arts. Governor Milliken modeled this ideal, and we are better for it. It's now my pleasure to welcome Bill Milliken Jr. to the stage. Thank you again, Bill, for the opportunity to honor your father here at Interlochen.
Thank you, Trey. I can't tell you how delighted we are to be able to be here at Interlaken at Kresge Auditorium to really provide a memorial service for my father. There have been, as many of you know, some fits and starts with COVID-19 and the calendar, and it's really a pleasure to be here where we can respect social distancing and have a safe environment for some of the thoughts that we're going to hear today. You received a program on the way in. The cover of that photograph is a photograph of Dad's Capitol portrait hanging in the rotunda in Lansing. This was done by Patricia Hill Burnett, who is a renowned Michigan artist. And the sittings for this were done down at the Detroit Institute of Arts in Detroit. And I understand that my father was not enthusiastic about taking multiple trips to the DIA to sit for this portrait. Nevertheless, Patricia Hill Burnett completed a very impressive portrait. We're sharing it with you today on the cover of the program. We've invited some people with a lot of insight into Dad's background to talk this morning, this afternoon. Bill Rustem is an MSU graduate who began working for my father in his administration when he was still a student at MSU. And he has been a fixture in Lansing, around the Capitol community, ever since. He's got institutional memory that's unrivaled, and he continued to be a friend. After Dad's retirement, Bill visited us in Traverse City. We had lunch together. We stayed in touch. So I asked Bill to come forward today as our first speaker to share some of his experiences with the Millikens. Bill?
Bill Rustem was an advisor to Governor Milliken. He also served in a variety of capacities in other administrations, including...
Thank you, Bill. Governors?
Rick Snyder's.
Pleasure to see you here. Thank you. Thank you for being here, for a very special man. I just want to start off talking to those of us who hung around the Capitol building in the 70s and remind you of a few things. We'll all remember this. Remember the smell of the mimeograph machines? Right? Remember the tuna fish and egg salad sandwiches from Don's stand on the ground floor? Right? Remember the ring and only one of the telephones, the ringtone? Remember the Jack Tar? How about finding room 214 and a half? And how about when we all had leisure suits? Remember that? Or how about Tim Stubick hiding out behind the west side of the Capitol building on Friday afternoon just so we could catch Governor Milliken before he took that ride back to Traverse City? You know, this day is hard for me. It's hard because those who really knew William Milliken, the governor, admired him, respected him, and most importantly, loved him dearly. I want to say at the outset that I'll try my best to channel George Weeks and Joyce Braithwaite, two of the governor's closest advisors and friends, and two of the most important mentors in my life. They are, of course, no longer physically with us, but I know they're somehow here with us today, celebrating a life lived exceedingly well. I hope my remarks today echo some of what they might have said on this occasion. It was 50 years ago this year that I started with the governor's office as an intern. 50 years. The first call asking if I was interested came from Charlie Greenleaf, who's here, and it defined the rest of my life. It defined my career. I met my wife Brenda there, and it gave a young, wet behind the ears guy from Frankenmuth the chance to learn from a great and a decent man. There's so much that can be said about Bill Milliken. He was and will always be Michigan's longest-serving governor. He believed fervently in the ideals of public service. He was kind, and he was tolerant. He was witty and disarming, and he was always genteel. He had a strong sense of what was right and what was wrong, and no one questioned his character. Make no mistake, he had steel, too. You don't fly 50 missions in World War II as a waist gunner on a B-52 and win a Purple Heart for being a softie. But above all, he was deeply and genuinely committed to leaving Michigan and its citizenry better than what he found when he came into office. And the people of Michigan bonded with his goals, his vision, and his demeanor. Listen to these approval ratings from 1980, after serving some 12 years in the governor's office. Republicans, 87%. Democrats, 70%. African Americans, 75%. Union members, 70%. And ticket splitters, 73%. Michigan's people measured the man, measured his record, and found him an almost perfect leader. They knew they could trust him. Can you imagine having Bill Milliken as your boss, your first boss, for 12 years? Not a day goes by when I don't pinch myself to have fallen into such great fortune. I and so many others here were lucky to work for a man who understood that there was nobility in public service, that it is civil discourse that leads to positive outcomes, and that it is always more important to listen than to shout. And lucky to work for a man who constantly reminded us that good public policy makes good politics. Finally, we were lucky to work for a man who believed in the important role of a free press as an important arbiter of truth in a democracy. He cared about us as much as he cared about his ambitions for our state. He saw something in many of us that we couldn't see in ourselves. Like many of you, I am in awe for all that he taught me through both his words and his deeds. Now, many of us on his staff were very young at the time. Yes, Charlie Greenleaf and Ken Franklin and I were all young ones. I think he liked having young people around because it reminded him of what the job was really all about. Building a Michigan for the future, a state where the next generation and those after would have a chance to live, to work, to play, and to prosper. You know, the easy road in politics has always been to appeal to people's hates, their fears, and their greed. Bill Milliken rejected that road. He believed that public servants had a higher calling, to find the best in each of us, to challenge convention, and to emphasize the ties that bring people together rather than drive them apart. Like Lincoln, he called on our better angels to prevail. Bill Milliken was, of course, a Republican. He was a Republican who understood and who believed deeply in the age-old ideals of his party. He studied history and learned from it. He fought for the principles of prudent budgeting, equal opportunity, responsible and equitable economic development, stewardship of our natural resources, and investment in infrastructure, all historically Republican issues. He understood in the deepest sense what it meant to be Republican. For his was the Republican Party of Abraham Lincoln, who led the nation through its darkest hours to bring an end to slavery, a horrible cancer on our nation's history and its founding principles. As a state senator, Bill Milliken fought diligently against those who wanted to eliminate Rule 9, a rule that prohibited discrimination in real estate sales in the state. When he became governor, he and Helen refused to move into the state-provided governor's mansion until a whites-only codicil had been determined to be illegal. Thank you, Mr. Kelly.
He's referring to Frank Kelly, the Attorney General of Michigan at the time, and for
as governor, he pushed for and achieved adoption of the landmark Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act. He was unbending in his support of a woman's right to choose, and he and Helen achieved ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment in Michigan, despite its not being ratified nationally yet. And when anyone would make a bigoted or misogynistic statement in his presence, he would gracefully but firmly put them in their place. His was the Republican Party of Theodore Roosevelt, who understood that humans are part of the natural environment and must be diligent in protecting the natural systems that sustain all life on our planet. As governor, Bill Milliken helped pull the nation and the world into a new era of environmental stewardship. He achieved passage of the historic Michigan Environmental Protection Act, went to the people to achieve adoption of our state's bottle bill, and worked with the Michigan legislature to create the Michigan Natural Resources Trust Fund. He pushed and signed laws to protect lakes, streams, sand dunes, farmland, wetlands, Great Lakes shoreline, and wilderness areas. He pulled together the first meeting of the Great Lakes governors and the Premier of Ontario to take a stand against the diversion of Great Lakes waters. And like Teddy, he was unafraid of taking on the rich and the powerful on behalf of a better future for our state. He did so when he took on the pharmaceutical industry to make Michigan the second state to adopt a generic drug law, cutting the costs of prescription drugs for our citizens. He did so when he took on the soap and detergent industry to ban phosphorus in laundry detergents, markedly reducing algal blooms in the Great Lakes, particularly Lake Erie. He did so when he took on the bottled beverage industry and its unions to lead a petition campaign and vote to ban throwaways in our state. And he did so when he took on the chemical industry to lead Michigan to become the first state to ban the use of PCB, which was contaminating salmon and trout in the Great Lakes, and to become the first state to ban the use of DDT. I gotta say about DDT, as Brenda and I were driving up here this morning, I saw an eagle. I saw an eagle. DDT, of course, was making raptors, which an eagle is, birds of prey, eggs thin. The bald eagle population was going down when Michigan banned DDT because of DDT. Every time I see an eagle, I think to myself, what if Bill Milliken hadn't had the courage to do what he did, to become the first state to ban DDT? Because, of course, what happened was, as soon as Michigan did it, then other states did it, and then the EPA finally banned DDT. Well, that eagle I saw this morning, I swear, it tipped its wings as if to say, thank him for us, too. His was the Republican Party of Dwight D. Eisenhower, who warned about the growing threat of a military-industrial alliance that could one day coerce a nation into wars it could not win in places it should not be. Eisenhower also understood, as had Lincoln and Roosevelt before him, the critical importance of investing in the nation's infrastructure. Eisenhower pushed through Congress the construction of the vast federal highway system that we all enjoy today, except for rush hours. As lieutenant governor, Bill Milliken led the campaign and public vote to bond for critical improvements to our wastewater infrastructure and our state parks, markedly cleaning up the state's inland waters and waters of the Great Lakes, and building the foundation of what is now the best state park system in the nation. As governor, Bill Milliken worked with the legislature to maintain our streets, our roads, our bridges, and our harbors of refuge. He fought to increase the gas tax twice. He understood that in a state that grows things and makes things, you have to move things. But he also saw the future. He pushed through a constitutional amendment and got it adopted by the people to permit up to 10% of transportation funds to be used for public transit and for paths for bicycles and walkers. His was the Republican Party of Everett Dirksen and Howard Baker, two men who understood the critical importance of the separation of powers written into the U.S. Constitution, and who regularly set aside partisanship to work with our counterparts in the Democratic Party to achieve what was right for the country. As governor, Bill Milliken worked diligently and effectively with members of both parties to move the state forward. For all 14 years of his governorship, the state house was controlled by Democrats, and 8 of those 14 years, so was the Senate. It didn't matter to him. He just went to work. He didn't call people juvenile names. He didn't threaten. He wasn't petty. He didn't bully. He didn't play the victim or blame game, and he rejected the empty allure of hyperpartisanship. Rather, he partnered with the majority Democrats in the legislature. He fought for tax cuts when possible and tax increases when necessary. He understood that policy objectives should always override partisanship and worked hard to reach common ground on sensible solutions to the state's challenges. He always had a detailed policy agenda. This is his last State of the State address, 149 pages of ideas. He always had a detailed policy agenda, from policy proposals on agriculture through consumer protection to public health to veterans affairs. He firmly believed that decent people, working with decent people, could define elegant solutions. And finally, Bill Milliken's Republican Party was the Republican Party of Michigan's own Gerald Ford, who became president at a time when the nation was torn, confused, and disappointed by the clear evidence of extremely low conduct in very high places. President Ford made the difficult decision to sacrifice his own political future to allow a nation to heal. As governor, Bill Milliken steered the ship of state through the troubled waters of student unrest over Vietnam on Michigan campuses, of back-to-back recessions, and of the chemical contamination crisis of PBB. He did so by listening to experts in law enforcement, economics, and public health. He sought facts, data, and the best of science. He listened, he considered, and he acted. He sought facts to shape his opinion, not opinions to support alternative facts. And he withstood the blows of those who criticized his friendship and cooperation with Detroit's Mayor Coleman Young and his personal and fervent interest in helping Detroit. Bill Milliken understood the simple fact that Michigan could not be successful unless its largest city was successful, and that everyone, and he meant everyone, had the chance to succeed. He often remarked that if some of us in Michigan are hurting, all of us in Michigan are hurting. He sought to build bridges, not walls. He wanted Michigan to heal. In short, Bill Milliken stood on the shoulders of the giants that preceded him, and yet somehow he reached higher. He understood the history that had been bequeathed to him and wrote his own. He brought grace, dignity, and vision to the office of governor and left a legacy of progress that continues to make Michigan a better state today. I want to mention at this point, I got a call from Governor Blanchard over the weekend, just letting me know that how much he appreciated the transition that occurred between the Milliken and Blanchard administrations and how warm and helpful Governor Milliken had been at the time. You know, if the purpose of life is to live a life of purpose, then William Milliken more than met that test. When he was first sworn into the office of governor on January 9, 1969, Bill Milliken said, "It is my greatest hope that this administration will be known for its compassion, its idealism, its candor, and its toughness in the pursuit of public ends." He accomplished that and much, much more. For me, he is the very definition of the leader that democracy deserves. Milliken, Michigan. Michigan, Milliken. The names will ring in harmony forever. If you visit many of our national parks, you'll often see a plaque that is a tribute to Stephen Mather, a founding father of our national park system. It reads simply, "The end will never come to the good you have done." Thank you, Governor, for all you did for me, for your staff, for those of us in this room today, and what you did for our children, and for theirs, and theirs, and theirs. The end will never come to the good you have done. We love you. God bless.
That was Milliken advisor Bill Rustem. And as he pointed out that the governor had a collection of young people who advised him, they were sometimes called the kitty counselors. Now Bill Milliken Jr.
Thank you, Bill. Very well prepared and delivered. Kind words. Bill touched on my father's B-24 service in World War II. He was a waste gunner. They were returning from a mission, and the radio man next to him was hit by enemy flak. And Dad saw him go down and attempted to administer first aid to him. That was a serious chest wound. On approach at the base, they signaled that they had a wounded man aboard. Medics came out and removed him, and medic shook his head and said, "No, he's not going to make it." As they picked him up, it turned out the flak had gone through and out his back. Serious injury. About 10 years ago, I got an email from a CPA in New Jersey who had just come back from the holidays with his family, who told me that his grandfather had just talked about a wartime experience that they'd never heard before. And his grandfather was the radio man who had survived. And the email from the young fellow was to thank me for my father saving his grandfather. Dad didn't know the radio man had survived, and when I shared that story with him, he was very touched by it too. But 50 combat missions exposes you to a great deal, and that's one of the medals that he brought home. Arlie Brower is going to come to the microphone next. Michigan State Police, commander of the governor's detail for the full term of Dad's governorship. And the bond that the troopers and governor's families develop, as Governor Whitmer knows, and Governor Engler knows, and Governor Blanchard knows, are very close bonds. The troopers know everything. They're with you night and day, and they see you up and down. And we got to know Arlie well. I consider Arlie a good friend, and many of the other men that were on the detail at the time. But I asked Arlie, with all of that time at my father's side, if he'd come forward today and share some of his experiences. Arlie, please come forward.
I want to thank you, Bill, for allowing me this opportunity to share some memories of your father. It was an honor and a privilege to serve him every day he was in office. On January 22, 1969, the governor was waiting for then-Governor George Romney to be confirmed by the Senate as Secretary of HUD for President Nixon. After the call was received, the governor and I left the lieutenant governor's office and went up to the governor's office. Chief Justice Deathmers was there, waiting to administer the oath of office, along with Mrs. Milliken and two or three others. 14 years later, after Governor Blanchard was sworn in, I had the honor of going with Governor and Mrs. Milliken to Traverse City as they began their transitioning back into private life. The most challenging task I have today is condensing those 14 years into a few minutes. During the time I served the governor, I believe I came to know the man he really was. I can honestly tell you the person you saw in public was the same person we saw in private. He was kind and compassionate and very approachable. He was a man of integrity, strength, and character. He was truly a great gentleman. He loved Traverse City and Mackinac Island in the summer. Those were his recharging places. Many weekends when we would head up north, he would be quiet and getting some rest and taking time away from his busy schedule. But when we would head back down, he would be energized and on the phone reading and ready for the week ahead. He appeared to draw strength from his favorite places. Bill Jr. shared that on his final day, he was sitting in front of the picture window, enjoying the view of Grand Traverse Bay. The governor had to deal with many tough issues during his terms. The PBB crisis was one of those issues. A fire retardant had been mixed into the cattle feed, killing hundreds of cattle and other animals and infecting others that then had to be destroyed. Obviously, the governor got deeply involved in trying to mitigate this situation. The governor decided to go directly to the angry farmers who were gathering daily at a rallying point out in the country. As we approached the site unannounced, we saw a pole with the governor hanging in effigy, a very daunting sight. Knowing the potential for serious confrontation, someone asked the governor if he still wanted to stop, and he replied, "Oh, yes, I still do. I want to talk to them directly." Since we were in a plain, unmarked car, we could have quietly driven away and no one would have ever known he was there. But he would have known. It was not in his character to simply avoid difficult situations. Although the meeting was very, very intense, the governor was able to deliver his message directly to the farmers. This is only one example of many in which the governor displayed his courage and his commitment to directly addressing difficult issues. There were other times that were much lighter and more enjoyable. Late one night, we had been at a campaign rally in Flint, and we were heading back to Lansing at a time before GPS and Waze. I was driving, and I thought we had to go right to get to I-69, but quickly realized I should have gone left. The governor was in the front seat on the car phone, and I tried to get the attention of the others in the back through sign language and lip reading. They appeared to be enjoying my dilemma, simply giving me thumbs up and okay signs. Just as I thought I had escaped discovery, I heard the governor say, "Yes, we're enjoying a nice ride out through the country tonight." The whole car exploded in laughter, and we realized again that nothing escaped the governor. He always knew exactly what was going on around him. The governor enjoyed the element of surprise, especially when he was doing the surprising. At his last term, he had decided he wanted to bring Jim Brickley back as his running mate. They met privately, keeping it confidential until the time came for the official announcement. That morning, we were on our way from the residence to the Capitol, and the governor stated, "I think we're going to pull this off." Jim Brickley had arrived at the Capitol very early that morning and was waiting in the governor's mailroom. The governor held his press conference and then said he had one more item. He left and came back with Jim Brickley at his side. The extent to which the governor had successfully pulled off his surprise was best measured by the expression on Tim Skubick's face with reading his lips with words I won't repeat here. And that's the truth.
Tim Skubick is the dean of the State Capitol Press Corps.
Yes, Governor, you pulled it off. I know the governor enjoyed the moment, and I would have to admit I rather enjoyed it myself. The governor was very athletic. As you may or may not know, he was on the Traverse City basketball team when they won the state championship for their division. He enjoyed swimming, biking, jogging, skiing, and tennis. But you're probably not aware that he had a football career. In 1973, the governor was asked to literally kick off the first season for the Detroit Wheels, a semi-pro football team. George Weeks, his chief of staff, and I were heading down on our way to meet the governor, who was flying in to Willow Run Airport. George commented that he wasn't sure the governor had ever kicked a football, and I wasn't sure either. So we stopped in Brighton and found a place to buy a football and a kicking tee. We proceeded to the airport and met the governor at the hangar. We set the football and the tee up on the asphalt near the car. The governor ran and gave it a very healthy kick. The ball soared up in a very steep angle and then started drifting off to the left and soon disappeared over the front of the hangar. As the hangar had a flat roof, the ball was never seen again. His next kick was the kickoff for the game. That one was more successful. And as far as I know, that was the beginning and the end of his football career. The governor didn't just superficially greet people he met. He didn't just shake hands. He became engaged with people, coming away knowing their names and personal information about their lives. He deeply cared about the people he served, and he deeply cared about the people who served with him. There are so many examples of his acts of kindness. He didn't have to care if his security detail was fed at various events, but he did. Many of us have memories of the governor appearing in his tuxedo checking to make sure we were cared for. He didn't have to personally sign our address or birthday or Christmas cards, but he did. He didn't have to make multiple calls to Gene Hochwater when he was home seriously ill, but he did. He didn't have to tell Dave Charney to stop when they saw Dave's daughter, Karen, walking to school on a cold, blustery morning, but he did. They stopped and gave her a ride to school. Occasionally, after he retired, some of the security detail who were available would have lunch with the governor here in Traverse City. At our last time together, we had offered to bring lunch to the residents in an attempt to make it easier for him. He enjoyed going to the Park Place Hotel, however, and so his preference was to meet at the restaurant there. Bill Jr. had driven up to provide transportation. Nancy Doctor made arrangements, as always, for a more private corner of the restaurant. Our lunches usually went for 2 or 3 hours because the governor loved to reminisce, and one story always led to another. When we were finally ready to leave, Bill Jr. went to bring the car up to the side door. The governor was walking slowly down the hallway. He stopped and said, "I have something I want to tell you." Jerry Hoag, Jerry Allaire, Carl Vintel, and I took a step in closer. He said, "I want you to know you are just like family to me." Except for the goodbye when he got in the car, those were the last words I heard him speak, and I will cherish them for the rest of my life.
And that's Arlie Brower, former commander of the security detail for the governor's office during the Milliken administration. You're listening to live coverage of a memorial for the late Governor Bill Milliken on the Michigan Public Radio Network.
Bill Milliken, Jr., getting up to introduce the next speaker.
I knew that Arlie could touch some chords there, and if we'd given him a half an hour instead of 10 minutes, we would have heard more. My father was in office for 14 years, and during that time, they didn't want him at the wheel of a car. And as it got closer, year 13, year 14, he always loved to drive, and he got a hankering to try and get in. And so, as I understand it, Arlie or one of the troopers put him behind the wheel and gave him a little practice. And I don't know what kind of marks he got, but it had been a long time, so I suspect that there was room for improvement. After retirement, he was invited to join the Chrysler Corporation Board of Directors. As a director of Chrysler Corporation at the time, you were entitled to a brand new car every year. Chrysler had just come out with its new Dodge Stealth, which was a very high-performance, turbocharged, all-wheel drive, two-door sports car. And he was excited about it. I would have been excited about it if it had been mine, but I was concerned about it being his. So for his birthday that year, I gave him a gift certificate to the Bobby Ray Hall Track Time Driving School in Watkins Glen, New York, and sent him off to upstate New York with his Dodge Stealth to put on a flame-proof driving suit and go to driving school for the weekend, which he did, and he relished. He talked to everybody about it when he got back. And the idea of that is that you've got a driver with capabilities and you've got a car with these capabilities, and driving school is supposed to move those two closer together. So I think we made him certainly a safer driver, and we gave him the ability to enjoy his Dodge Stealth. Chuck Stokes from WXYZ-TV in Detroit is a familiar name to many of us all around the state. Chuck's been at WXYZ, I think, for 27 years. Is that right, Chuck? You can tell us. And for those of you that were here prior to the beginning of the memorial service, we had about a 40-minute interview that Chuck did in Traverse City at the Milliken home with Bill and Helen Milliken, talking about the governorship and things that Dad was involved with at the time and causes that he was pursuing. But I wanted Chuck to come today and talk about some of the years of experience that he's had watching the Milliken administration and Bill Milliken in retirement. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. Please come forward.
Chuck Stokes, longtime Detroit television journalist, host of Spotlight on the News, a public affairs program.
Good afternoon. Governor Whitmer, Bill Jr., distinguished speakers, ladies and gentlemen, it is an absolute honor and a pleasure to be here today to be invited by Bill Jr. I've had the pleasure, and Bill was nice, 27 years, but it's been a little longer than that. More than three decades I've had the pleasure of interviewing all of the governors during my tenure at Channel 7 and both parties, and it's always been a pleasure. So to be invited here today is a huge honor. In my opinion, William Beall Milliken was a true statesman, a genuine and caring person, and in his very relaxed style, a treasure for broadcast journalists, print journalists as well. He was thoughtful. He was well-read. He understood the power of the media and was quite comfortable delivering impactful sound bites for television. Milliken grew on Michiganders. On August 23, 1966, Channel 7's Barney Morris did a man on the street interview asking people if they knew the lieutenant governor who was running for governor. Here's some of the public reaction. William Milliken? I don't know, never heard of him. Then turned to another person, said, William? With a question mark, followed by a long blank stare. Then reporter Morris, trying to help the next person on the street out, said, he's the lieutenant governor of Michigan. To which the lady replied, oh, fine, I'm glad to know that. 14 years later, Channel 7 political reporter Jim Harrington, who covered all of Milliken's tenure in Lansing, said in a stand-up to one of his one-hour primetime Christmas specials with Governor and Mrs. Milliken, quote, at first, many of us didn't think he had the toughness and personal resources to handle the job. But very few of us really knew Beall Milliken. And then we realized sometimes nice guys really do finish first. And there's a good chance he will always remain Michigan's longest-serving elected chief executive. Milliken, a lifelong Republican, worked hard at keeping a nonpartisan profile. He built coalitions and partnerships and lived up to that age-old adage, politics makes strange bedfellows. His genuine friendship with Detroit Democratic Mayor Coleman A. Young earned him the title Michigan's Odd Couple. Harrington, my old TV 7 colleague, later admitted to Milliken he was the guy who then popularized that term on television. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but that was Jim's story. My own personal encounters with Beall and Helen Milliken actually came after their official years as Michigan's first couple. We had a common and trusted friend, the late Bob Berg, who faithfully served Milliken and Young. In 2003, Berg arranged for me to interview Milliken at his Traverse City home. My wife, Trudy, who's here today, interviewed him first for a video she was producing for the Detroit Urban League. The governor would be receiving that civil rights organization's highest honor, their Distinguished Warrior Award. Milliken was liked and admired and trusted by African Americans, as was mentioned earlier. I then sat down after he finished his interview with Trudy and did an interview with him for my weekly Spotlight on the News program. It was during the winter school break, so we took our two daughters with us, Kelly and Kim. It was a special history day for them. The Millikens wanted us to bring the whole family. Kim will never forget, she's the youngest, she'll never forget that trip because she severely sprained her wrist ice skating at Grand Traverse Resort the day before the interview with Mr. Milliken. Her arm was in a sling. As the then sixth grader, she was really, really embarrassed and kept trying to hide her arm behind her back in all the photos that the governor wanted to take with the family. But the sympathy and the kind words she received from the Millikens is something she said as recently as last night she will never forget. But on a more serious note, Millikan pulled no punches in our interview about the environment, global warming, affirmative action, and support for urban areas. 2 years later, in 2005, Bill Millikan and I would sit down again for a one-on-one interview on the very majestic and beautiful porch of Mackinac Island's Grand Hotel. The former governor delivered a passionate speech to the Detroit Regional Chamber, where he warned, and I quote, that the meanness, bitterness, and excessive partisanship was working to the detriment of the region, the state, and the nation, end of quote. I've covered more Mackinac policy conferences than I can count. And it was the only time I remember seeing a speaker get a rousing stand of ovation. My final in-depth spotlight on the news interview with Governor Millikan was at his home in the fall of 2008. With fall leaves everywhere, it was a picturesque setting overlooking the bay. And in an exclusive interview, Governor Millikan revealed for the first time publicly he crossed political party lines and voted for then-Senator Barack Obama to become America's first African-American president. And he said, and I quote, "I have no regrets about doing that. It is with great excitement he was selected." Millikan concluded that Obama was the best candidate, in his words, far and away, to address America's serious challenges at that particular time. You recall in 2008, the economy was in trouble, the auto industry was on the brink, and tough things had to be done. He also reaffirmed his strong belief in a two-party political system and warned that his beloved GOP party about going too far to the right. When I asked him about accusations that he was just a closet Democrat, he chuckled and restated that he wasn't leaving his political party and he would do everything he could to, quote, make it a growing, responsible, and strong entity, end of quote. Millikan also cautioned Democrats not to go too far to the left. He felt the best governing comes from the middle. And of course, you know we journalists, when you interview someone of Millikan's stature, at that time 86, you have to ask what all journalists want to ask. How do you want to be remembered, Governor? And he looked at me, paused for a second, and then said in short, "I would hope I would be remembered as someone who tried to advance racial equality in our state, who dealt honestly, openly, and fairly with every person, and who tried to put intense partisanship aside to do what I felt was in the best interest of Michigan as a whole. If I can have a reputation like that, having served longer than any other governor in this state, then I will be totally content." In my mind, there's no doubt that Governor William G. Millikan, a courageous and an independent-minded leader, is resting comfortably with his strongest supporter, lifetime confidant, and powerhouse in her own right, Helen Millikan. Thank you.
Bill Milliken is now going to introduce Governor Whitmer. Four governors, Blanchard, Engler, Granholm, Snyder, separating
the two
governors.
Thank you, Chuck. Very well put and great insight. Mention of my mother's name, Helen Milliken, brings to mind in the 70s. She was co-chair of ERA America, and there was an ERA America national conference held in Houston that she wanted to attend and made arrangements and headed for Houston. But as First Lady, a Michigan State Trooper accompanied her, which was standard procedure. So we've got a big hall in Houston full of thousands of women from all over the country, and the trooper is staying with her. She's moving through the house. When an authoritative woman comes up and challenges him and says, "Sir, what are you doing here?" And he looked her in the eye and smiled. He said, "Ma'am, we own the building." And there was no further controversy after that, and they had a good conference, and Mother came home. Last October, after Dad died, I got a very nice condolence call from Governor Whitmer, which I appreciated, and I took advantage of the fact that I had her on the line to ask her if she would be a speaker at Bill Milliken's memorial service that we'd be holding in the spring, and she readily agreed to that. Little did either of us know that we'd have several dates in succession when we hoped to hold a memorial service. And she and her staff have been easy to work with and open to change after change. And I'm so excited that I'm finally able today on August 6th to introduce Gretchen Whitmer to you to talk about Bill Milliken. Governor?
Thank you. Thank you. It is an honor to be here. Last year, Michiganders lost a true statesman, a model of bipartisanship, and a Michigan icon who served our state with integrity and honor. In his 14 years of service as governor of our state, Governor Bill Milliken taught us a number of powerful lessons. Lessons that leaders everywhere will carry with them for decades. Governor Milliken is deservedly known for his commitment to protecting our environment, investing in public education, preserving jobs in the auto industry. He understood that in Michigan, a strong foundation is built on the preservation of our Great Lakes and fresh water, a quality education for our kids, and paths to good jobs for everyone in our state. And as a kid growing up in Michigan in the 70s and 80s, I can tell you I was a direct beneficiary of his leadership, as were so many of us. Now, decades later, these values still hold true, and the paths we take to meet those goals can define who we are as leaders and as Michiganders, now and for generations. And we must work in his memory to get it done. While I didn't know Governor Milliken during his time in office, his leadership has always had an impact on my life. In fact, the day that I was born, almost 49 years ago, at Sparrow Hospital, just down the street from the Capitol, my father worked for Governor Milliken. And my birth announcement even mentions Governor Milliken. I was raised in a household of two public servants who revered their bosses. My father worked for Bill Milliken and my mother worked for Frank Kelly. You can only imagine the conversations in our household. But these were two amazing public servants who helped shape the careers and worldview of the people who raised me. And I never imagined I'd have the great honor of speaking to acknowledge the leadership of Governor Milliken. I learned as a young child from my dad and mom and many of their friends about the profound respect with which they held Governor Milliken and how well-deserved it is. Under Governor Milliken's leadership, my dad served as the director of the Commerce Department and learned from him many important lessons that he and then in turn passed down to my siblings and me. Lessons about treating others with respect, even the people on the other side of the aisle. Later, as an adult in politics, I've had several opportunities to meet Governor Milliken firsthand. He was a person of great substance and honor and decency, and in fact, we wrote back and forth a little bit after that speech he gave on Mackinac Island that Chuck referred to. He loved and protected Michigan's natural beauty and was deeply committed to treating every Michigan resident with respect and dignity. I also know that he valued the importance of keeping a sense of humor. And Tim Skubick, who couldn't be here with us today, longtime Capitol reporter, someone to be equal parts respected and avoided, if you're in my job, said this of Governor Milliken. During a news conference, Governor Milliken was asked his position on a unicameral legislature. He thought for a second and said, "Sometimes I think the proposal only goes half as far as it should." I imagine Governor Engler and Governor Blanchard can agree with that sentiment or could at some time when you were in office, and I certainly understand the wisdom in it myself at times. Governor Milliken was always eager to learn from his predecessors, regardless of their party. Michigan's only governor from the UP, Governor Chase Osborne, had a profound impact on Governor Milliken, even before he became governor. Much like Governor Milliken was a friend of my father, Governor Osborne had been a friend of Governor Milliken's father, and long after his governorship, served as a mentor to Bill Milliken. He had such an impact that his portrait hung outside the governor's office throughout the years of his service. Governor Milliken understood that true leadership means knowing that it is more important to listen than to speak. Whether it's a mentor like Governor Osborne or a legislator from the other side of the aisle. Like Milliken learned from Osborne, I've had several years learning the lessons of Governor Milliken that he taught us every day, and that we are all Michiganders first. No matter our political party or the community in which we live, we're all bound together by this great state we call home. Governor Milliken led by example, and that example should remind us every day never to abuse or ignore or forget the sacred trust of public service. It should remind us that there is an important role of government, that it is never to forget who we serve and to treat the people we serve with humanity and dignity and respect. Governor Milliken's passionate belief that everyone can and should make a contribution, a positive contribution, was expressed by many of his public actions. He acted as a man who believed that politics must be an honorable profession and that public service is amongst the greatest honors bestowed on a person, and that this honor is accompanied by a serious obligation to always perform at one's best. Most of all, Bill Milliken behaved as a man who understood that he was not the governor of a special interest or a region or a party. Governor Milliken was a governor of all the people of this state, those who voted for him and those who didn't. And for these and many other reasons, we remember him fondly. During his tenure, Governor Milliken, a Republican, served alongside a Democratic legislature. But this commitment to working across the aisle to get things done never wavered. In fact, when I was serving in the Michigan Senate, my dad first introduced me to Governor Milliken at the Detroit Opera Theater. He said to the governor, "Bill, this is my daughter, Gretchen, and she's a state senator and she's a Milliken Republican." Now, let's remember, this was in the advent of the Tea Party and the changing dynamics of the Republican Party, and there were fewer and fewer of these Milliken Republicans. So the governor seemed really pleased, and his eyes lit up, and he said, "Really?" And my dad said, "Yeah, Bill, she's a Democrat." We all had a good laugh at that. The governor thought it was hilarious. During his 1972 State of the State Address, the governor said, "Divided government carries with it a mandate from the people to act with wisdom, to work together, to seek ways to reach honorable compromise. If both parties take this approach, then the public interest will be served. Both parties will gain, and the entire state will benefit. As we work to navigate today's divided government and to solve problems for the people of Michigan, Governor Milliken's words still ring true. In the era of vast political polarization in which we currently live, we can't forget that sentiment. Governor Milliken taught us that our love for Michigan and our commitment to all people who call it home must transcend politics. He taught us that we're Michiganders first, and we must work to find common ground for the betterment of our state. In preparing for this occasion, I spoke with some of those still amongst us who worked for and with Governor Milliken. Perhaps no one worked more closely with him than our state's eternal general, Frank J. Kelly, who served as the state's AG for nearly 40 years, and despite their different political parties, worked very closely with the governor during his 14-year tenure. He said, "I've worked with lots of people in my life, and I can assure you that Bill Milliken was a different kind of guy in almost every positive sense. He was a sweet fellow who seemed that he'd rather be kind than be right. A true gentleman who lived by Lincoln's law that the best way to defeat an enemy is to make a friend out of him." The Attorney General went on and said, "People say we need more civility in government today. They're right. My friend Bill Milliken knew that real change can't come from brute force. Rather, real change comes from recognizing that nobody has one right answer all the time, and that it is often more important to listen than to speak." Bill Milliken knew these things. Bill Milliken lived these things. And besides being a great governor and a great man, Bill Milliken was among the best friends I ever had. So on this day that we again say goodbye to Governor William Milliken, let us be conscious of the fact that his many contributions live on. And let's pray that his spirit of sweetness and generosity, tolerance, civility, and love of this state has not been and will not be forgotten. As a public servant and a lifelong Michigander, I'm proud to have learned from Governor Milliken, and I know that long after I'm gone, the influence he had on our state will remain intact. My love and support goes out to the governor's family on this day. May we all continue to learn from the lessons Governor Milliken taught us.
And that is Michigan's Governor Gretchen Whitmer speaking at a memorial event for the late Governor Bill Milliken. We're live in Kresge Auditorium on campus of Interlochen Center for the Arts. This is the Michigan Public Radio Network.
Here's Bill Milliken Jr. Thank you for those heartfelt words, Governor. Those are great to hear, and you put a lot into that. Thank you. One of the things that I wanted to call your attention to is the chair behind me on your left, my right. That was Bill Milliken's chair in the office of the governor in Lansing. And I have husbanded that ever since 1983. The governor brought with her a Michigan flag, which is on the seat of the chair, which has flown over the Capitol as a gift in Dad's name, and a special tribute that's framed on the easel next to it. So we thought that it would be, I didn't know that the flag was coming, but we thought it would be worth having the chair on stage with us today as a memento of the time that Dad spent in the Capitol. Next, I would like to introduce Jack Lessenberry to you. Jack's been reporting on politics for years and has an encyclopedic mind for data. He could probably tell us the margin by which my father won Grand Traverse County in 1978, but I'll let him answer that question. Jack, come join us. Jack Lessenberry.
Jack Lessenberry is a longtime journalist and columnist here in Michigan.
I don't know the exact margin, but it was a whole lot. the governor once, I told him, I said, "I have to confess this to you. I didn't vote for you the first time you ran." He looked at a poker face and said, "Well, why not?" I said, "Well, I wasn't old enough, sir." And he paused and he said, "I'll consider forgiving you." The last time I saw Governor Milliken was shortly after the election in 2018. Elizabeth and I went to see him and his son, who we will forever think of as young Bill. I remember we stopped to buy the governor a flavor of ice cream he really loved called Michigan Pothole. Gretchen Whitmer had just been elected governor, and Governor Milliken told me he was happy for her and he thought she would be a good governor. And I said, "Well, I agree with you. I think she'll probably do a fine job, but I want to point out to you that you served your 14 years before term limits, and you're legally entitled to 8 more." And I added, "So, when Governor Whitmer's second term expires at the end of 2026, I fully expect you to have been reelected and be ready to get back to work in the Capitol." I said, "I know very well you've always been opposed to age discrimination, and the fact that you'll be 104 years old then is no reason to refuse to take the job." And he thought about that for a few moments, and then he looked kind of sad and said, "But I thought you liked me." I did like him, of course. I loved him. But more importantly, I deeply admired and respected him. I thought when he was in office, and believe more strongly now, that he was what a politician and a government official and a man should be. I suspect nearly everyone in this room by now, if he didn't before, knows the essential outlines of his career, longest-serving governor in the history of the state. We know he'll remain that because they amended the Constitution to not allow anyone to serve longer than 8 years. Champion, of course, of the environment. When it came to Detroit, I can tell you, as Chuck Stokes could, that he was a man 40 years ahead of his time. He realized in the 1970s that you could not have a prosperous Michigan without a vibrant Detroit, and he pushed his fellow Republicans in the legislature to enact an equity package to compensate Detroit for the cost of cultural institutions that benefited the entire state, like the DIA and the library. No governor has ever done as much to protect the Great Lakes. He fought to enact strict regulations on phosphates and laundry detergents in 1977. Governor Milliken successfully pushed for some of the nation's strongest wetlands protections a couple of years later. If you want to know more about his life and rather incredible career than we've told you today, Dave Dempsey's excellent biography, William G. Milliken, Michigan's Passionate Moderate, is the best place to start. On the issues, Bill Milliken was almost always on the side of the angels, as they used to say, but that's not what made Governor Milliken great. What did make him great was his essential decency and integrity and respect for people and his ability to get them to work together. His ability, as his friend and former legislator John Stewart reminded me the other day, to inspire and to delicately manage to get others to reach compromise and consensus. Bill Milliken was, at least outwardly, one of the least ego-driven politicians I've ever known. I knew, of course, that, as been mentioned, he flew 50 combat missions in World War II, something, by the way, that very few men survived. I know he'd been hit and wounded by flak. He'd survived a crash landing, and on another occasion had to bail out of a bomber that was going down. Never bragged about that. Once, long after he left office, he told me a story about the story that young Bill told you about how he saved the crewman's life after that man's chest had been blown open. He put his hand over the entry wound. Those planes weren't heated back then, and his hand froze solid in the other man's blood. When they landed, he told me, getting his hand unfrozen and off the man's chest was extremely painful. And he left, and when it was over, he was rubbing his hand and said something like, "This is a hell of a way to run a war." His reward for that was to be written up by an officer for using profane language. That was the only reward he got. He told me that story over dinner at the Park Hotel in Traverse City one night, long after he'd stopped being governor, and I said, "You know, Governor, I've read about your military career, but I've never heard that story before." And Helen Milliken said, "Until about a year ago, neither had I." Now, during his career, because he seemed so mild-mannered and was always a gentleman, people made the mistake of thinking he'd be a pushover. He wasn't. He never lost an election. At the Republican State Convention in 1964, he outmaneuvered George Romney's preferred choice to win nomination as lieutenant governor, that was not easy. Romney was the elephant that filled many rooms in the Republican Party then, but Bill Milliken became lieutenant governor. He was then elected governor on his own three times in an era when the Republican Party was much weaker statewide than it is now. And while his first two elections were very close, the vote totals hide the fact that what's truly amazing is that Bill Milliken managed to get elected at all. 1970 was a bad year for Republicans in Michigan. Richard Nixon wasn't very popular. Senator Phil Hart was elected by a landslide, beating George Romney's wife, Lenore, by more than 2-1. Bill Milliken had a very strong opponent and one he respected in Sandy Levin, but he managed to win a very close race. 4 years later, it was even worse. He faced what was the worst midterm election for Republicans since the Great Depression. Richard Nixon has just resigned, had been pardoned by Gerald Ford. Republicans are wiped out that year nationwide, losing dozens of seats in Congress, losing governorships. Bill Milliken faced Sandy Levin again, and while the race was again close, he more than doubled his winning margin. 4 years later, Bill Milliken did win his third term by a landslide, even winning Wayne County. After that, he very likely could have been elected to the Senate or served in some president's cabinet or gone off for a high-paying job in Washington or elsewhere, as many former governors have done. Instead, he went home to Traverse City and did the best he could to advance the causes in which he believed, from the environment to helping the Michigan Women's Clemency and Justice Project, trying to get women who are being unjustly incarcerated out of prison. There's one mistake I wish he had not made. He never wrote his own book about his life and what he stood for and how he saw the state of ours. I also wish more people had known about his wonderfully elfin sense of humor. One of my favorite stories he told me was one time he was campaigning with George H.W. Bush at Eastern Market in 1980, the year in which George H.W. Bush won the primary here by a landslide over Ronald Reagan, something that helped make him vice president. A man came up, they were shaking hands, and a man came up and called George Bush every name except the child of God and cursed at him and walked away. And Bush looked kind of stunned, and Governor Milliken said, "I think we'll put him down as undecided, George." He also told me that he loved football, but he hated to go to the annual University of Michigan and Ohio State football games because he had to sit with Ohio Governor James Rhodes, who always managed to spit tobacco juice all over Governor Milliken's shoes, and sometimes Helen Milliken's as well. Mrs. Milliken told me what she thought about that, but I will not repeat it. There's a lot more I'd like to say that I don't have time for, but I'd like to add one thing. Many people in both parties said that Bill Milliken was no longer a Republican. That simply wasn't true. As Bill Rustin told you so eloquently, he had a vision of what the Republican Party was like and should have been like, a vision inspired not only by men like Abraham Lincoln, but by his own father and grandfather who preceded him in the state Senate. He enthusiastically, to the end of his life, endorsed Republicans whom he admired, but he put country over party and state over party. A few years ago, we happened to have brunch with Governor Milliken. The morning after, a group of Grand Traverse County Republicans had voted to no longer recognize Bill Milliken as a member of the Republican Party. I was kind of concerned as how he'd feel about that. Turns out, he thought it was kind of funny. I think he probably felt sort of the way that Bill Gates would if he was hissed at by a homeless man. You know, I was teasing, of course, when I was suggesting to Governor Milliken that he run again after Governor Whitmer had left office. But if he'd lived that long and he'd wanted to do it, I would have had no hesitation about voting for him for governor or any other office. Let's all work, everybody in this auditorium, let's all work to see that he's not forgotten. Thank you very much.
That's journalist Jack Lessenberry, who covered Bill Milliken for a very, very long time. And now Bill Milliken Jr. is approaching the microphone to, I believe, Peter, to wrap
just like
this up.
Those radio broadcasts, yes. Jack. Wonderful. Nicely done. Thank you. There are a couple of people that were around the governor's office that I want to recognize today. Joyce Braithwaite, the indomitable Joyce Braithwaite, who had a lot to do with appointments and was quick to make judgments on some people, and if you fell on the wrong side of it, you landed on the swine list. And that was a place that was almost unrecoverable once she put you there. But Joyce Braithwaite and George Weeks, who was initially Dad's press secretary, later chief of staff, and in the end, longtime friend and confidant. George and Joyce and my father used to have lunch together every few weeks. They laughed and called themselves the Three Amigos and compared a lot of stories about days gone by and people gone by and fun reflections and policy discussions about what was going on in the state. George Weeks stayed with him until the end, and George would call two or three times a week with press tips. Governor Snyder's on Meet the Press, or Tim Skubik is grilling somebody on Off the Record. So we'd get these periodic calls. George always had an ear to the ground. His old instincts never left him until the end. But George and Joyce were treasures in the administration, and upon their judgment, he relied a great deal. Bob Berg was another one. Chuck Stokes mentioned Bob. Bob was also press secretary in the Milliken administration, and upon retirement, Coleman Young invited him to serve as his press secretary, and Bob spent how many years? 10, 12 years, Chuck, maybe? Long tenure working for Coleman Young, and those are polar opposites in some ways, from Bill Milliken to Coleman Young, but Bob brought the same calm, even-handed, analytic ability to tactic and strategy, and was just a wonder to have at your side. And he remained a continued friend of my father's all the way through, and he and Wanda used to visit Traverse City and have lunch, and Bob often helped him write editorial pieces or things that were causes of the time that he was working on. So Joyce and George and Bob, wouldn't be fair to conclude today without recognizing them and how they were all allied with Dad and the administration. We contemplated, in the spirit of the way these are traditionally conducted, to hold some sort of a reception to follow today, but today is not the time to host that kind of a gathering. You've all been very patient today to respect social distancing, interlocking, gracious to provide this enormous auditorium for us to spread out and be safe. What we are going to conclude the day with is that as you leave in back and at the doors through which you entered, we are going to be handing out white pine seedlings to everybody that's here today. The white pine is the Michigan state tree. I think you're probably all aware of that, but there's another aspect to this that makes it even more logical. William Grawn Milliken, Dad's middle name was his mother's maiden name, Hildegard Grawn. And Grawn is a name that's of Swedish extraction, and translated from Swedish, means pine tree. So we've got a double entendre there that makes the white pine seedling that I hope you will all take, plant, nurture, and have as a legacy at your home to Bill Milliken. Thank you all for your time. Thank you for the speakers and the time you've all dedicated to being here with us. I'm grateful for that. We are going to, we'd like to dismiss you in groups as we leave. I'd like section number 3 in front of me to be the first group to go back, and if you like, claim your pine tree. And we're going to have the grand piano is going to come back and entertain us while you relax and take your time and as, after Section 3 goes, then let's do the outside Sections 1 and 7. So thank you very much. Great to have everybody in the House today.
And that was Bill Milliken, Jr., son of the late Governor Bill Milliken, wrapping up this memorial remembrance of Michigan's longest-serving governor, who's remembered as a moderate Republican who worked across the aisle with Democrats and who was a passionate advocate for environmental protection. I'm Rick Pluta.
And I'm Peter Payette. This has been a production of Interlochen Public Radio. We want to say thanks to our engineers, Michael Culler and Gary Langley. We had help from Interlochen Presents. We want to thank Director Brent Robel and his team. Thanks also to John Robert Williams for his help. You've been listening to this special broadcast on the Michigan Public Radio Network.